Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Lauren Brooks, Taylor Dahl, and Mia O'Brien.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
Welcome into the baseball grounds as we continue our coverage here. Florida State about to get underway. Number 6, Florida. Number 17, Florida State. Here, and this rivalry is always heated, Taylor.
Yes.
But tonight it feels a little extra because you've got Florida State coming off of a sweep by Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, they were undefeated. Florida lost midweek 2 weeks ago to Florida State, but Florida's coming off of taking 2 out of 3 from LSU. At the time, was the number 4 team in the country. There is going to be some fun baseball going on here tonight.
I agree, and I think that every year, we've been here, the last 3 years at least?
Several
years, and every year it does have that extra little glimmer in the air because it's Florida State. But when you have something like this, Florida State definitely wanting to rebound after their recent series, and Florida coming off, was that 12-2 win, their final of that series, too?
And that was run ruled.
Yes.
And ended in an 8 inning.
So they're on a high right now, ready to continue that. So it's definitely going to be a fun day. I was watching, as we were doing the national anthem, obviously they'll put up on the screen out in the outfield, the lineups, you know, they kind of go up and down the lineups. Almost every Knoll had a mullet, and I kind of like that. I was like, look at all these mullets.
You would. Yeah, I know there's a current Knoll that's a former UNF player, Alex Lodis, who's having a really good season so far. And so there's always local connections. Starting pitchers tonight, right-handed pitcher Alex Philpott for Florida, left-handed pitcher Andrew Armstrong for Florida State. Those were the two pitchers who squared off the first time these two teams met 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So always fun to have this game here, the Sunshine Showdown. And we appreciate the Gator Bowl sports team for having us. And we will certainly keep you updated as the night goes along. Absolutely gorgeous weather around 80 degrees. Little breeze blowing in, and couldn't be better for a night of baseball.
I was also, real quick, I was thinking about this last month. And for the city of Jacksonville,
yes.
Obviously this game yearly, always a good time. But when it comes to even JU and UNF basketball, Florida basketball, how I know it ended not the best, but they had a really good season. We just had the Icemen are playing really hot right now. I feel like one thing after another, shrimp baseball is about to start. And there's just so much fun when it comes to sports in Jacksonville. And I know a lot of people are like, well, they only have one pro team. But the amount of things, Players Championship just a couple weeks ago, the amount of things, like sporting events that we have here that are so much fun. I think that some people take it, like, you know, don't really acknowledge that sometimes.
Yeah, I think you have to spend some time in Jacksonville to really understand all the different things that this city does well. And you're absolutely right. All of those sporting events, and later we'll talk about some music festivals that are in town as well. You mentioned Florida basketball in the 7 o'clock hour. Right at 7 o'clock, we will talk to Chris Harry from FloridaGators.com and really get the inside look into how that season ended a little short, obviously, there as the Gators lost to Colorado in the men's NCAA tournament. And then coming up in just a few minutes at 6:15, we will talk to Demetrius Harvey, who was down in Orlando for the owners' meeting. I really appreciate him being able to join us. He also an FAU grad, so we'll talk to him about FAU men's basketball quickly as well. And so let's really kick things off with the owners' meetings. They've occurred the last few days, and Doug Peterson, I think, had some really interesting comments. He certainly spoke for quite a long time, as you know, and we've played the cuts on the radio station all day yesterday and today as well. But there was one in particular that stood out to me, and it has to do with the culture that he wants to establish here. Here is Doug Peterson.
This is the culture that I want to establish in Jacksonville, and this is the reason why you go get guys like Mitch Morse and Eric Armsteads and the Darnell Savages and guys that have been to the postseason. These guys have been captains on their teams, and, you know, they've been to Super Bowls. They've been to AFC Championship games. You know, so these guys know how to win, and that's kind of the influx of talent that we want to bring onto this, our young roster, guys that have been there, done that. And you know, again, it's just I've got to continue to message the team in the right way. And you know, there's got to be a sort of a confidence about you that, you know, when you take the field on game day that, hey, you know, yeah, you, there's going to be game. You're going to get beat. I understand that. But you got to have that confidence and that swagger that you know, you're going to get the job done, you know, on game day. And I think bringing in some of these free agents we did this spring are going to help that.
So, Taylor, as far as that specific comment, the reason that it stuck out to me is I think there are two guys that have joined this team as far as free agents are concerned, and who we mentioned, Mitch Morris and Eric Armstead, that are drastically better than who was here in the past. Yep. And Luke Fortner is obviously still here at the center position.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as Foley Fatakasi gone, and nothing against Foley, but I think the level of play at those two incredibly important positions will change this football team.
Yeah.
And some people would argue, well, you can't just trade out the center and one defensive lineman and play much better football and all that. The Jaguars were so close to making it to the postseason last year. I would argue that absolutely Mitch Morse on this team would have helped them run the ball more. And Eric Armstead in the middle of that defense would have helped them stop the run a lot more. I think those two players, and certainly the places, those teams that they came from and the winning culture where they came from, those are such incredibly important additions. And I love that Doug Peterson met with media yesterday and shared about those guys.
Yeah, I think that when you – this pointed to they realized the errors they made last season. And we talked a lot about them just not making many moves at all this last free agency and how that kind of affected certain aspects of the game. But I think that in addition to that, to pile on to just not making moves, you were relying on a lot of young guys. And that's fine sometimes. Sometimes you end up nailing the draft and you have these guys that come out and
sometimes.
You don't sometimes I'm not saying here at Jacksonville, other teams find these guys, no, but you, I mean, we talk about Anton was he was a pick that worked. Some drafts end up having multiple of those, but you can't always rely on that to happen. A lot of times it does take some time to develop. It takes these guys a little bit of time to get used to that NFL speed, they say, all of these things. And I just feel like the Jags were relying on a lot of young talent slash just Calvin, who hadn't played in a couple seasons, and I think they learned from that mistake, and now you see him going to get these moves in positions of need, but also veteran guys, and like he said, who add a whole other level, because not only are they somebody who you can count on playing at a high level, but you also, they can be leaders in the locker room. They can help some of these younger guys. You can talk about Eric Armstead and how much he can help Trayvon Walker, and we've already seen Trayvon Walker's leap this last year and what Josh Allen's have been able to do. Now add Eric Armstead onto that, and the fact too that they always talk about how Trayvon can play outside and get moved inside if he wants, and now you have a guy in Eric Armstead who can play everywhere on the offensive line, I mean the defensive line pretty much, who can show Trayvon the way. And I think it's just such an important thing, because when you do not have those leaders, and not saying there wasn't anybody on this team who, you know, kind of took that step, obviously Josh Allen with his season he had last year was definitely someone you would consider one of the leaders on the defense. But Eric Armstead's a guy that you would pretty much guarantee to be able to kind of take reins of that defense and take it to a new level. And like you said, some people say one person can't do it. I agree with you. I think that the interior of both lines, you build from the inside. And they did that. It looks like that's what they're doing now. And they learned from last year that you have to.
They certainly did learn the hard way, yeah. I'll say. And look, I think Doug Peterson is a coach that really understands his weaknesses.
Yeah.
And he learned certainly from his time in Philadelphia as well, how clashing with a general manager and roster building can land you in deep trouble. And so I think at the end of the day, the Jaguars have such opportunity now, like you said, with the draft to get better. And there's only so many young players that you want. Look, the Chiefs make it look so easy. They've got those young star cornerbacks, and they win the Super Bowl. Yeah. But it doesn't always work like
that. They send off Tyreek Hill.
Correct. And still win the Super Bowl. But again, because they are an organization that has it figured out, and their quarterback obviously elevates everyone around him. And Jaguars fans are certainly waiting, and Jaguars brass even, they're waiting for Trevor to elevate those around him. All right, Mia O'Brien off tonight. She will rejoin us next week. But first, want to get to Demetrius Harvey, who comes up in just a few minutes to talk more about the owners' meetings, the rule changes, FAU men's basketball. A lot to do right here live from the baseball grounds on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Sports with a glass of Chardonnay. Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010 XL.
Well, so far so good if you're a Noles fan. Seminoles lead 3-0 in the top of the first. So certainly fast work by FSU as we welcome in Demetrius Harvey of the Times Union. Demetrius, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join us tonight.
No problem. How are you guys doing?
We are great, thanks, because we are in Jacksonville, FLA, here at the baseball grounds for Florida State, where the wind is blowing. How was your time in Orlando at the owners' meetings? What did you learn, the main thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was good. It's sort of standard where you go there and then, you know, the coaches come in and you sort of sit around a table. And I really like how it's in that environment, because I feel like the coaches are pretty open and honest, or at least more honest and more open than they typically would be when they're standing in front of a podium and all those guys are sitting down. I think we learned a pretty good bit. It felt like, I thought that it was interesting, especially what Doug Peterson said about how, you know, last year in the way that they lost, he's going to be remembering that for a long time. You know, every day he thinks about it. That might be a bit of hyperbole, but, you know, it seems to be a sentiment that sort of garnered throughout the entire organization. You know, it obviously impacted them a lot. It impacted how they felt about the roster, about the coaching staff. So I do feel like he's going to be implementing more changes to basically better the team than it was late last year.
Well, that is good. That's good news, Demetrius. Another thing Doug spoke on was the cornerback room. And a lot of people, as we are now less than a month away from the draft, have been mocking a corner to the Jags at 17. He made a couple comments, and it kind of tugged me both ways the way he commented on it, because his first initial response was he feels good about the room. And obviously they went on and they had added Ronald Darby and Savage, who's a safety, but it seems like they may use him in that nickel corner spot. But what were your feelings about those comments? Because then he kind of went on to talk about how important, and it's a passing league, and how important that is, but also guys who are physical against the run, and maybe that's something that kind of stood out a bit last year. So what were your thoughts on those couple comments?
Yeah, you know, I did think that, you know, it was kind of interesting to see him actually come out and say that Darnell Savage would be the opening, at least, you know, for training camp or whatever it may be, you know, penciled in starter right now at nickel. It sort of does reflect how they would view those kind of cornerbacks. I mean, bigger, physical kind of guys who are fast, quick. I'm not saying Savage is that huge physical guy, but, you know, he's a guy that's definitely capable of playing in the slot. And I thought that, you know, from when he said that, it sort of shifted a little bit in terms of the view of that position group as a whole. You know, now you can kind of see the vision, Ronald Darby, Tyson Campbell, and then Savage in the slot. But, you know, I don't think that it'll preclude them necessarily from taking a corner at 17, because, yeah, you have Ronald Darby, but he's also missed a lot of time in his career. And Tyson Campbell struggled last year, and Darnell Savage is going to be essentially, I mean, he played a little bit of it in Green Bay, but essentially new to this position in the NFL. So there's going to be some sort of a learning curve, and then you have the situation where obviously at 17 you want to be able to maximize your value there. And I feel like corners still, given that, you know, both Ronald Darby and Tyson Campbell are in the, you know, basically one year left, 2 years left in their contracts. Tyson Campbell, you know, is entering his contract year, so it's important for them to definitely upgrade that position. I don't think that anything that he said yesterday necessarily takes me away from that cornerback group.
So, Demetrius, 17 corner, 48 wide receiver, is that where you would land right now?
Yeah, it's so tough because I keep going back and forth. I really go back and forth between wide receiver at 17 or corner. It really depends. If a guy like Terrion Arnold is there at 17, I think you have to do it. I think that he can be a surefire lockdown corner in the league. I think that he fits Ryan Nielsen's system perfectly. Big, physical guy. Not super fast, but you don't really necessarily need that, especially in this sort of system where they're going to be really physical at the line of scrimmage. I feel like the long speed is still fine. I think he ran like a 4.5 40, something in that range. So, you know, he's going to be okay. And I really do think that, you know, at 17, if the right receiver falls and Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell don't fall, then perhaps you go in the receiver position. You know, you go for a guy like a Brian Thomas out of LSU, you know, and A.D. Mitchell out of Texas. I do feel like those two guys kind of fit perfectly in that 17 spot, and then you can come in and you have a wide receiver finally to grow with Trevor Lawrence. You know, that's the one thing the Jaguars haven't done yet, is get a guy to grow with Trevor Lawrence. Yes, they brought in Christian Kirk and Zay Jones and guys, but those guys were already in the league. This is going to be a guy that can, you know, be relied upon by Trevor for years to come. So I do think that that would be an important position to take. So you could flip-flop either one of those, and I'll be fine with it.
Yeah, I think most people here would be fine with either of those, especially with the depth in the wide receiver room. Demetrius, mm-hmm. you talked a little bit about that, the collapse, and Doug spoke on that and how that's not, you know, that's not the standard here in Jacksonville. It's not his standard when it comes to this team. But what kind of stood out to me is a lot, some of the issues we pointed to were play calling, and he didn't take that play calling away. He didn't take over the play calling, and still I think Brett Martineau was the one who asked him, and there still wasn't quite an answer of what the play calling it was going to look like, whether it be him or Press Taylor. So what was kind of, obviously you are there to see that. We hear over radio still some hesitation, but I mean, or when we're hearing to the audio, some hesitation, but what was the vibe of when that question was asked? Do you think that it would be something that he'll do, is take that play calling back over?
Yeah, the vibe when the question was asked was more, you know, Doug kind of looked at Brent and sort of smiled, laughed. You know, it was a situation where, you know, I think both Brent and Doug knew that he wasn't going to answer the question. So it was kind of more of, you know, let's wait until maybe OTAs or whenever we get Doug again or whatever the case may be for him to finally reveal what that was. But to me, what stands out is, I mean, if it was going to be Press Taylor and it is Press Taylor, then he would have already said it would be Press Taylor. So to me, it feels like Doug Peterson will take back play calling. But I could be completely wrong and he's just hiding it to be coy. But it just really feels like that's the direction it's going to head into.
I can just feel this just being kind of a little joke now until he officially announces it. Just ask Doug. Mm-hmm. Doug will smile, say no decision yet, move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
It could come Sunday morning of the first week, right, yeah. Or the first game. And you hear some cheering in the background, Demetrius, because Florida baseball just scored. As like I said, at the top, the Noles led after the top of the first, 3-0. But now it looks like Florida has scored at least one run. I'm waiting to see how many. But, Demetrius, is Doug Peterson the most likable coach you've ever covered in your career?
I mean, absolutely. I've covered Dan Mullen, Billy Napier for a little bit, Urban Meyer, Doug Marrone. So my list is not very great in terms of personality.
Okay. I set the bar kind of low there, didn't I?
Yeah, just a little bit. You know, Dan Mullen was fun to cover just because, you know, he's a guy that has a personality, is kind of, you know, excitable. But, you know, down the stretch there, it kind of got a little bit shaky. So yeah, Doug Peterson, absolutely. He's the most interesting, the most fun, relaxed feeling coach that I've covered easily.
He definitely just brings a different vibe in general. I saw the picture from the league meetings and he's wearing the Jags gear. He's like one of the, like the only coach I think actually wearing the team's gear, but he just has that look where you're like a little like, almost a little goofy, but I loved it. I love Doug. I want to talk a little bit about some of the other things, just NFL league-wise, some rule changes coming out that obviously have gotten a bunch of attention. One of the main ones is the new kick return. For the people who may not know about it, will you just like a quick explanation of what those changes are and how were the feelings of the coaches about some of these changes?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit complex to explain, but if you think of it, you know, simply as, you know, the players basically have to line up on the opponent's 40-yard line. The kicker still kicks off from the 35. The kick has to land within the 20 to the goal line to be returned without it being a touchback. I mean, that's basically the basic tenets of it. You can't move until the ball is either, you know, hitting the ground within that 20 to the zero, or if the returner, you know, catches it. And that's basically, you know, to excite, you know, the fans. I mean, that's going to bring back kickoffs. That's going to supposedly help with player safety. And it's sort of basically the XFL model. So if anybody's been watching that, then that's out there. And that's basically what the NFL is going to implement.
All right,
and the vibes.
Yeah.
Just real quick. The vibes that I felt from coaches, it was more of questioning more than them being against it. They're just curious on what this will actually do, what plays are going to have to be made. You got to remember, you know, for years, this has been basically the same kickoff forever. They moved the lineup. They changed a couple of the way you can block, but essentially it's the same. So, you know, everybody's just running the same thing basically on autopilot. Now they actually have to think about it. You have to think about personnel, think about things like that. So they're just more questioning more than against the rule.
Demetrius, I know you've heard of Jack Caglione, the loud roar you heard a little bit ago. That was him hitting a three-run oppo bomb. So it's all tied up.
I witnessed
now.
It in person.
That's right.
Kind of.
It's all tied up. Yeah, kind of, because we can only kind of see. It was certainly a fun I just watched it on the replay monitor, but it was certainly a fun thing as far as the Florida fans are concerned. So back one more thing before we let you go. I know you have some plans tonight. As far as FAU men's basketball, obviously not the season, the end of the season that you wanted, and then Dusty May leaves FAU for Michigan. How do you feel about your team moving forward?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, we all knew that Dusty May was going to leave, and, you know, a lot of people predicted it would be somewhere else, but he goes to Michigan, and, you know, that's his decision. The biggest thing is going to be, you know, with the transfer portal, the way it's set up, it makes it so easy for all these guys to sort of, you know, the young guys that he actually wants, he can basically just pluck them away if they're fine with moving to Michigan. So, you know, it's a little disappointing, but at the same time, I do think that Dusty brought the program to the point where once you do get another coach in there, it's going to be viewed as a legitimate competition. You know, my years going to FAU, barely anybody went to the basketball game because it just wasn't competitive. And now I think that this is a legitimate, you know, organization, a legitimate basketball team. And I do think that we'll get back there.
All right. Good stuff. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time tonight. Enjoy being back in Jax.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
There he goes, Demetrius Harvey of the Times Union, freshly back from Orlando and the owners' meetings. And I totally understand, Taylor, in watching the video yesterday morning. And by the way, they got going pretty early. It was before 8 a.m. That Doug Peterson met with everyone. It does feel more relaxed than a press conference type of setting.
Yeah.
And I think for the select reporters that attend those, they really do get some of that back and forth banter, and maybe they get to read between the lines a little bit more than, like I said, at press conferences. And by the way, just a reminder, this Florida State baseball game is on 10:10 a.m. So if you want to hear the live play-by-play instead of our slightly delayed updates, make sure you put it on that. The game is also on SEC Network Plus. All right, so as far as the NFL rule changes are concerned, how do you feel about, do you like the hybrid kickoff model?
I think I do. I'll be honest, I have not watched the XFL, so I was watching clips today because obviously people started being like, hey, this is what you should expect. So I saw some clips today. I like that part of the game, and yes, it's changed, but I do think it adds an element to it where people will want to watch it again and rewind back to February when Devin Hester was announced he was going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and some people were saying it. They didn't think he deserved to be in there. This was one of my strongest arguments. Not that I was making the argument for Devin Hester to be in there and to make it into the Hall of Fame, but like my main argument was that we'll never see that. Like we will never see that type of kick return ever again. Punt returns potentially may change too. So in my head, when you talk about history and how football has evolved over all of these 100 plus years, you talk about Devin Hester, and you will not talk about that part of the game without Devin Hester. And now things are going to change. It's going to look very different. It's going to be weird. It's going to take some time to adjust. Anytime something's new and things change, there's some people that are upset about it because some people kind of, you know, they like the game the way that it was, and it's going to continue to evolve. It's never going to stop, and that's just kind of what these times are. But what will be interesting to me, Lauren, is how that affects the way coaches will build these special teams now, because are you going to want to change? Are these kickers going to have to be a little more athletic now because they're the only ones that can move until that ball hits the hands or the ground?
Good thing we have Joey Sly, everybody. He is built for this new kickoff rule.
And so it'll be interesting to me to see how these coaches start to just adjust their rosters and their special teams rosters, but also are coaches going to be able to finesse some things and figure out a way to game plan to get, you know, more touchdowns in that area, and what will that do to the game? Because obviously people like points, people like scoring, but they also like their quarterbacks and they like their wide receivers, so you want to see them out on the football field. So I think it'll be fun. And I think it's just going to, I guess the player safety part of it is their big thing. But for me, it's bringing a part of the game back that I feel like we lost, as in scoring and the kick returns.
Right. And we've had Jamal Agnew here for a while. Now, obviously, the Jaguars have Devin DuVernay from the Ravens. And yes, those are electrifying moments.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked, not this past season, but the season before, like the Jaguars don't beat the Titans in the late season game for the right to go to the playoffs without Jamal Agnew, one of his returns. Like, he is so incredibly talented, and hopefully DuVernay has some of those moments now, like you said, with this new rule. The hip drop tackle one, I'm going to have to wait and see how it plays out.
Yeah.
I think people who are freaking out about it as of right now, just wait and see how many they actually call.
Yeah.
I don't know that in the moment that they're going to be able to get that right, and I feel like unless it's incredibly obvious and egregious, mm-hmm. they're probably not going to blow that
whistle. Which is
going to
be difficult.
Yeah, and so that's why everyone's like, oh, you know, taking more things away from football.
Yeah.
And yes, in theory, I just don't think that it, like I said, live action, that they're going to be able to go, that was a hip drop tackle.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be way too difficult. And oh, by the way, a lot of times when we see tackles, it's not a one-on-one situation.
Yeah.
There's multiple people going in there.
Well, and that's what's going to be interesting to me. Are they going to force it? Because you don't want it to be forced to where they feel like they have to throw flags. And we've seen that with previous penalties they've added where you almost feel like they're staring, looking down for. And usually it's because they say, hey, this year we're going to crack down on this specific penalty. And it's
right.
not that. This is just a new one. But because it is new and because it's at an added focus, is it going to be something that they're paying almost too much attention to? And I hope not, and I think that's where some people are concerned. I liked Coach Campo made a comment that I liked a lot, because he was talking about how that what it's doing is making, in a lot of people's comments, like offensively, you see a lot of players being like, well, learn how to tackle correctly, you know. And Coach Campo made a comment saying, okay, well, you want these guys to have like almost perfect tackle. That's what we've done now, because you can't hit too low, you can't hit too high, you can't hip drop. All of these things that have started now eliminating, you've now eliminated from what the defense can do. But what you've also done is take away almost all of the hits that they can do in preseason and in the preseason games and in training camp and in practices during the week. So you want these guys to perfect something that they can't even really do during the week until game day.
And that's a really good point, like you said, that Coach Campo made on XL Primetime. It's going to be interesting to see how big picture the NFL evolves over the next 10 years, because it's already obviously started to evolve to a more passing league and giving the offense more of the benefit of the doubt. Eventually, everyone always jokes about flags. Like, it does feel like we're going to have flags on quarterbacks. Like, that's where it'll start. Like, you can't tackle him, because you know what? If the Chiefs don't have Patrick Mahomes, then their season is over and the NFL ratings go down and people lose money, and money's the most important thing, as we all know. It'll be interesting to see the evolution as player safety certainly becomes more and more important. And I'm glad that they've taken certain steps as far as reducing concussions. That was the first step. I feel like we can all only remember one hip drop tackle from last season, and it's the one when Mark Andrews, the tight end, ended up suffering that injury, and he was out until the postseason. Like, I can't think of any other ones. And I'm sure there were more, or else they wouldn't have passed.
Because I think in the league meetings they said there was about one a game.
Okay.
So it doesn't seem like it was something significant, but it's a 15-yard penalty, automatic first down. So that's a big penalty for that. So it is something that they're going to – it's going to cause chaos, that first one that they call, where people are like, what? That's what you're calling this on? You know, it's going to be one of those situations.
Yes, it certainly is.
And it affects somebody to lose.
And right. That will be certainly something that will send fans into an uproar if it's a late game type of situation. All right, we're all tied up 3-3 here at the baseball grounds. We've already seen a lot of – offensive action in the first inning, so certainly enjoying this breeze and this beautiful evening. Tons of Florida fans, tons of Florida State fans. And by the way, Jack Caglione, that three-run home run earlier, that was his 12th home run on the season. His 11th was on Sunday against LSU. That was his 12th of the season. So just such an impressive player, obviously also a pitcher, and really good at that. All right, we will have Taylor take us around the NFL when we return. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels.
Brightened by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
We are here live at the baseball grounds, number 6 Florida and number 17 FSU, tied 3-all right now as we head to the top of the third. And certainly this crowd is having an absolute blast. Completely different second inning than the first, obviously, when you had 6 runs scored and then none in the second.
I want to say that exact thing, same thing happened last year, because I feel like we had...
It was high scoring at the beginning,
yeah,
and then it leveled off.
Yeah.
And by the way, you were asking me in the break how many home runs Jack Caglione hit last season. So far this season, he has 12. Like I said, he hit 33 last year. So he has just been on a tear, and always fun to watch pitch as well. All right, Taylor, let's go around the NFL. So much has been going on ever since, I feel like, free agency began.
Yes, we talked about the rule changes. Those are two big things going on right now. But I also just think as we kind of exit the initial few waves of free agency, you start to see these contracts settle and you see certain floors set of what you can expect when you have to pay certain people, or when, you know, certain teams around the league have to pay certain people. And we just saw recently with the Jags not keeping Calvin. Calvin went and made money elsewhere.
A lot of money.
Jerry Jeudy went and made a lot of money. Keenan Allen got traded, made some money with Chicago. So there's a lot of these wide receivers that we've already seen inked in deals that we're kind of like, whoa. Now let me give you this list of wide receivers that are coming up on the market.
Okay.
And let's just think about what these contracts are about to look like.
Is he the first one?
He's one of them.
Okay.
So there are 5 of the best wide receivers in the NFL are up for extensions coming up.
Paydays.
Including Justin Jefferson. The others to keep an eye on, obviously, CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra, Brandon Ayuk. All of them are all going to be coming up and getting extensions soon. So in this article I was reading about this, it's just pretty much talking about the wide receiver market. But it says, to be more specific, you could make the argument that maybe 3 of the top 5 receivers in the league are looking for contracts, meaning these 3 are likely to reset the market, potentially surpassing Tyreek Hill's $30 million per year average. Yeah. Someone has to go first and could set a new floor for the other 2. So I feel like, Lauren, if you're one of these teams, if you are, and you obviously have choices, I think that the majority of these teams want to keep these guys. The Vikings don't want to get rid of Justin Jefferson.
They went
and got Jordan Addison. Jordan Addison looks like he's going to be a really good wide receiver too. They're kind of in that middle of what they're doing at quarterback now. I'm guessing they'll draft a quarterback. It sounds like they're going to trade up and draft a quarterback. Behind that is Sam Darnold, so they should probably draft a quarterback. When you talk about Ja'Marr Chase, this is somebody that we've talked about a ton, and you talk about how that just completely took Joe Burrow to a whole nother level, and that's what a lot of people have talked about. He was the guy that Joe Burrow, you already were seeing glimpses of when they added Ja'Marr Chase. Joe Burrow took to a whole level. So are the Bengals going to want to part ways with Joe Burrow? I doubt it. I highly doubt it. So
A big year for him, for sure.
Definitely.
He's been extended and everything.
Yeah.
But certainly since he's been hurt 2 out of his, 4 years now.
I know. And so that's question marks too. But I think that when you're looking at these wide receivers, do you think that some of these teams, the Chiefs did it, but the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, but getting rid of their star wide receiver and going younger and trying to find a guy that could be the next without having to pay this big money, or do you maybe try and be that first team to ink them so you set the floor and you're not waiting for that number that you have to hit?
Yeah, I mean, to me, $30 million a year for someone who's going to get you, and this is Tyreek Hill, 1,800 yards basically, 1,799 yards a season ago. I think that's
worth it. How many touchdowns did he have?
That is a good question. He had 13.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the type of productivity that is worth that $30 million a year. And, of course, the Dolphins with Tua Tagovailoa haven't had to give him a big payday yet. So they can still
manipulate.
Yeah, it would certainly be coming up if they decide to go that route. I think it's another big year for him, too. But then you go to a guy like CeeDee Lamb. He had almost 1,750 yards with 12 touchdowns.
Right behind.
I mean, then you've got Amon-Ra, St. Brown, 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like, all those guys are worth
right
it. Ja'Marr Chase was well behind them. Now, granted, Joe Flacco, like you mentioned, got hurt. He had 1,200 yards and Joe, yeah. Thank you. Joe Burrow got hurt. Joe Flacco was with the Browns, not the Bengals. Ja'Marr Chase only had 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns. And then, of course, Justin Jefferson was hurt for several games. And he ended up with over 1,000 yards, but just 5 touchdowns, which is not a great season for him.
And Kirk got hurt, too.
And Kirk got hurt, exactly. So I feel like, I mean, it's not my money, so it's always easy to say.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that number one wide receiver is so incredibly important. And I think I feel that way so much because have the Jaguars given Trevor Lawrence a true legitimate number one wide receiver?
Mm-hmm.
You can argue about Calvin Ridley last year. I don't think that he fits that category because of the fact that he had had the 2 years off between the injury and the suspension. Had he this upcoming year, maybe you could argue that he would have been a true number one. But these guys are.
Yeah.
And your offense flows a lot of times through them. It's becoming more of a passing league, unless you have a guy like Christian McCaffrey. And so I would say, yes, I'm paying these guys. And I understand the temptation to go young, but how many good receivers or rookie receivers, young receivers, will turn out to have these types of years?
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit harder to predict that.
It
depends if you're in your window. That's the main thing.
Yeah, and especially if they are moving on with their quarterback that they have because that quarterback already has a connection with this guy. Like the Vikings, for example, I could see their argument because they're going to say, hey, we're going to be getting a new quarterback anyways. Maybe we can get one of these top receivers in the draft. It obviously won't be Neighbors, Adunze, or Marvin Harrison, but this wide receiver draft's deep enough to where they could still
get Brian Thomas.
Hit, yes.
Yeah.
And so you get one of those guys and you get to completely reset that with a quarterback and a wide receiver and you have 4 years with both of them.
Right, because you're not in your window.
Yes.
Yeah.
And but for some of these other teams, I mean, the Cowboys have a lot of questions to answer because of Dak. I feel like Dak's just played, and last year he had a really good season, but it's just been that moment where he can't win in the big moments, and it's become a problem to where they have some decisions to make with that, too. And obviously, if you're going to sign somebody to CeeDee Lamb to $35 million per year, you want to make sure you have your quarterback throwing to him. So
that is certainly a big part of it. And I don't know how confident they are in Dak.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they ooze confidence in him.
Yeah, it does, because there's moments in the playoffs where you almost feel like they've taken the ball out of his hands in certain situations because they don't want him to turn the ball over. And that's not what you want your quarterback that's not what you do to a quarterback you trust. But I do think each of these situations are different because when you go to the Lions and Jared Goff has had a really good, so far, tenure in Detroit, a lot of people still question certain things with Jared Goff. But when you're looking at Amon-Ra, it's another situation where it's like, is Jared Goff your guy that you want for the next X amount of years? Because if you're going to pay Amon-Ra, then you're going to have to make sure that you have the quarterback throwing to him, you know?
Yeah, and I think Jared Goff has done exceedingly better than ever I predicted or most people would have predicted. I think they kind of thought once the Rams gave up on him, like, he's, you know, a quarterback that I think kind of like people always thought with Kirk Cousins, a quarterback that can keep his head above water, but not ever, you know, actually get you to the promised land.
Yeah.
And so I think they've also done a good job in Detroit with the type of culture that they have and everything like that. To me, these receivers are so important because the quarterback chemistry with the receiver is there. And, and again, I always bring it back to the Jags. Other than Christian Kirk, I don't know if there's a receiver on this team that Trevor trusts at all times.
Yeah.
I think he trusts Zay Jones most of the time, and Zay can go up and make plays, but his safety or his comfort level is way more as far as a safety blanket with Christian Kirk. So once he got hurt, obviously that changed everything.
And we just heard about the Marvin Jones Jr. and how much that trust and not having Marvin Jones last year affected certain things. So it is interesting because when you do have it's almost like your security blanket where you have your guy that's your comfort and you know you can find that guy. You know he'll catch it. You know that he'll be able to, if you're going through your reads and not finding it, he's going to get open in some way. And that is, you do feel like, we almost joked about it last year a few times, Lauren, like when Zay wasn't in, like, is Zay the guy that kind of like takes this offense over? But then when Christian Kirk went out, it was very noticeable of how big of an impact he is on the offense. But I think that's why so many people, fan-wise, on Twitter, when you're asking what they want in the draft, a lot of them are leaning towards wide receiver because they do want just another guy to, now you're heading into year four and be able to, you got a young wide receiver now if you do that, and you're going to have to pay Trevor coming up. So you have a young guy that you can count on the next 4 years to develop and grow with Trevor.
Right. And then the opposite counter argument of that would be, we have to know if Trevor's the guy.
Yeah.
And this year is so important. So let's surround him with people who we already know they can do it instead of, you know,
question marks on that.
Yeah. Instead of wondering if Ridley's going to run the right route, let's get a guy. That's why I think everyone was so excited about Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
Is it Ayuk or Ayuk? I have Brandon always said Ayuk. And then recently I've heard more people say Ayuk, and I was like, when did change?
I have to say either way. Brandon Ayuk. That's how I say it, however
so
that is.
So I'll change to Ayuk. But either way, I think that's why fans were so excited, because he is a proven guy. He has been in such a great system, and adding him to this receiving core, you know what you have in Evan Engram in addition to that, too. And so now we can know for sure how good Trevor Lawrence is going to be. And that's why I keep asking the question about Brock Bowers.
Yeah.
Like, and I probably sound like a broken record, because at every turn I'm asking draft analysts, like, okay, I know the most people think cornerback, and I know receiver would be the second option. Some people would go interior defensive line, some people would go interior offensive line, either way. But if Brock Bowers is there, I know the Jaguars just drafted Brenton Strange last season, but if Brock Bowers is there, right? Yeah, I don't remember him. So that's why I keep asking that, because it's like, that's giving Trevor such a good red zone weapon. I mean, an all-over-the-field weapon, but certainly a really good red zone weapon, and that's where this team has struggled, this offense specifically has struggled. And so that's where it's just been, it's been, I think, that's such a debate, because the good news is I think they're going to have the pick of whomever they wanted.
Yeah.
Reasonably wanted there, because I do think five quarterback, because of the quarterback run and the receivers and the tackles.
Definitely. And I think it's something that I talked to Tommy Mack. I can't, one of the times.
He's here, by the way.
Oh, is he?
I didn't get to talk to him, but I saw him walking up.
Oh, I did not. One of the times
we'll
that
have to text him and have him come join us.
Yeah, come talk to us. One of the times that I don't even remember, because I was on him with the kickoff show. We did heels. We did the drill. One of those times. I was very vocal about that, about how this is such an important year to figure out what Trevor is. And I don't think in very small group of people maybe are saying, I don't really trust Trevor. The majority are saying they think Trevor can be the guy. It's just, what level is that? Like, what tier is this? Is this a Patrick Mahomes eventually tier, or is it the one right below that? That's where they're trying to figure out. And so to me, that's why it was so important, the interior offensive line, because you don't want excuses there. You don't want it to be another season where you're like, well, he didn't have time to throw, or he kept getting sacked, or we couldn't run the ball, so there wasn't much we could do on the offense aside from Trevor having to figure out a way to get the ball to one of the wide receivers. So that's one thing. But also, that's why I mentioned, I want to say it was last week or the week before, about the Brandon Ayuk, and how I think that it could have possibly been, I know a lot of people were in uproar about giving up 17 for him, but that was kind of one of my reasonings of why it would logically make sense to me, because you bring in a veteran wide receiver. If the Jags go wide receiver at 17, like you said, it's a young guy, and now you're trying to figure out if that's the right guy, number one, but also build that connection, and he's trying to figure out the NFL, all of those things wrapped in one. But if you get a known veteran wide receiver, you come in, you add that into an offense that's already been built up a little bit with in front of an offensive line that's now been built up, and you give Trevor the perfect opportunity, there's no excuses at the end of the season, unless barring Trevor injury, of what he is and what level he is and what you have to do beyond that. So this is a big year of figuring out what Trevor Lawrence is and what that contract's worth.
Absolutely. All right, when we get back, we will have Chris Harry join us talking all things Florida men's basketball. You are listening to Helmets and Heels live from the baseball grounds on 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line. A Tuesday night tradition in Duval.
Helmets and Heels.
Switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
And we head to the top of the fourth here, live at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville, with Florida and Florida State tied at 3. All six of those runs scored in the first inning, so the second two have been much quieter. As we welcome in our friend Chris Harry from FloridaGators.com. Chris, how are you today?
I'm just saying, am I the helmet or the heel?
You get to be the absolutely fantastic author. How's that?
finally.
I read your coverage all season long, and Chris, I have to tell you, I did not want to read your final article on this Florida men's basketball team because it was such an incredibly difficult loss on Friday with that 102-100 score to Colorado. But let's start first big picture. Todd Golden is the right man for the job, and that's good news for Gator Nation.
Oh, yeah, and I think this is kind of what we talked about when we were on last week with you guys. Just the direction of the program, his ability to identify talent, particularly in the transfer portal. I mean, he hit two home runs with a couple freshmen that were very lightly recruited players. During the season, there were some losses that some people probably looked at a little bit sideways. But I think there's some merit to learning on the job too when you're a young coach. Remember, this guy's just 38 years old, and I think what we saw late in the season, just the way they took it to Alabama, coming back from 18 down against Texas A&M in the SEC tournament. Coming back from, I believe it was a 13-point deficit with 4 minutes to go in that NCAA tournament game on Friday. These guys play hard for him. And one of the things that Todd talks about three mentors. He has one is Randy Bennett, who's had a phenomenal career at St. Mary's, who he played for as a walk-on point guard at Gonzaga. Kyle Smith, the guy who gave him his first job. He was at Columbia. Then he went to a USF out in South San Francisco, where Todd eventually got his job. Then to Washington State, which he took the tournament and was just hired yesterday at Stanford. And he talked about Bruce Pearl, who gave him his first high-major job as an assistant at Auburn. And what he learned from Bruce Pearl out of the most that was different than the other guys, who he called mad scientists, kind of, who did basketball in the lab, he learned about relationship with players. The better the relationship you have with players, the harder they'll play for you. And when you're behind the scenes like I am, you see how close he is to these guys. And I think it shows up in between the lines on game day. And it certainly did toward the end of the season.
It definitely does, Chris. I think when you look at last season and compared to this season and the jump they made, because the bad loss to end last year with UCF and the NIT, and then this year, 7 seed. And you just talked about that transfer portal and how important that is in college basketball in general. But being able to really hit on those players, too, is really important. And it seems like Todd Golden was able to do that this last year. But moving forward, some more tough decisions coming this offseason and probably looking back into the portal. Are you confident that he will be able to do that again and even take the next level up when we look at this next season with the Gators?
Well, it doesn't matter, Taylor, if I'm confident. It matters that if he is. He's a very confident guy. And they have what they believe is the blueprint for how they want to play. They want to have two bigs who play really, really hard and rebound like hell on the floor at all times. Okay, and then they want to have three guards on the floor at all times, perimeter players, shot makers, and three-point shooters. Now you got to go out and identify them. And the key to it now is you got to project, because a lot of these guys that they're going to bring in are going to be mid-major players. When you look at the home runs last year for Florida, Tyree Samuels, Seton Hall, so you saw what he was able to do against Big East. But Walter Clayton was at Iona. He was virtually unrecruited as a player, a basketball player out of Bartow, Florida. He was actually way higher recruited as a football player. And then Zion Poland came from Cal Riverside, which – I mean, I'll give you $100 if you've ever seen Cal Riverside play, and if you stay up even at 11:30 at night or watching ESPNU. So to be able to project those two guys to come into the Southeastern Conference, Zion Poland was first-team All-SEC, Walter Clayton was second-team All-SEC. If Walter Clayton chooses to come back next year, he has a chance to be the preseason conference player of the year, certainly a first-team All-Conference player preseason. But so it's going to be a mix of projecting from mid-major. I mean, there's going to be players you've never heard of from schools that you've never seen play. But that's just college basketball in 2024, you guys. I mean, look across the board. Dalton Knecht from Tennessee played at North Dakota. Grant Nelson from Dalton Knecht from Northern Colorado. Grant Nelson, a really good player at Alabama, was from North Dakota State. I mean, you got to be able to see these guys and say, okay, can they play in the Southeastern Conference, which is among the most athletic conferences in the league? And, you know, that takes some time. That takes some vesting.
that takes them reaching out and doing some gumshoe work, talking to people. And then you got to make sure they fit your culture, which means they'll get along with people in the locker room and be content. This is important. There's only a few guys that can play 29 minutes a game. Some of them got to come here and play 17. A guy like Micah Hanlockton was a 7-1 guy. He was recruited by a lot of people, but he came here and ended up being a 17-minute, 18-minute guy before he got hurt. Do they have that kind of mentality, team-first mentality? That's the kind of blueprint that Todd Golden is looking for right now.
Chris, quick baseball update. FSU hit another home run, so it is 4-3, and Florida just made a pitching change. So Ryan Slater takes over on the mound from Alex Philpott. As far as, I think, the most recent loss, the loss to Colorado, it stung so much for Gators fans, and Chris, certainly for you too. It felt like the officiating was not, I'll say, accurate, and certainly we saw that the head of officials made a change with one of the refs on not being able to call games moving forward. Was that the sentiment in the locker room or after the game, or was it more of a, man, we had to have played better defense in order to win that game?
Well, I mean, certainly there was some obviously some issues from Florida's standpoint with the officiating. That's why Todd got his technical foul, and I actually sat behind him during the game, and it was very colorful conversations he was having at times. But I mean, in the big picture, I mean, there were some really key calls. I mean, that they were Colorado just got baskets too easy. They were driving downhill too easy. And was Florida fouling too much? Yes. I'm not going to sit here and talk about how officiating lost the game for them when the opponent shot 63% from the floor. And now we can talk about the free throw discrepancy and what have you. You never want to be complaining about officiating because, I mean, in a two-point game, how about you allow 55% shooting, which still sucks, okay? But you probably win the game. 61% or whatever it was, 60.3, 63%, whatever the percentage was that Florida allowed is, you can't live with that and expect to advance in an NCAA tournament game. So they have some things that they have to fix on that end of the ball, but again, it's going to be a completely different. The personnel is going to be completely different. They're probably shopping for people maybe or a little more elite players on the ball.
One of the names, Chris, that were talked about a lot leading up to it, because you saw Riley Kugel's minutes kind of decrease throughout the season, and then some people kind of point to that being maybe some of the issue when it comes to the defense in that game. What are your thoughts on that, and what do you see moving forward with Riley and the Gators?
Well, like everything, actually, Riley, he was a DMP in the last two games of the SEC tournament. He actually played quite a bit in the NCAA game and was pretty good. I think he had 11 points. He had, I think, three steals, including a really big one at the end of the game that allowed Florida to tie. But again, so this portal thing is a two-way street now. So in the old, it wasn't that long ago that coaches had all the leverage. You know, you want to transfer, okay? Well, you go sit out somewhere 1 year. Well, now it's with this court injunction that allows people to bounce around, these players to bounce around wherever they want without having to sit out a season. A player's going to go in. All these players meet with the coaches after the season, and they talk about, you know, what's next, preseason or off-season plans. What we want you to do. What is your role going forward? And if any of these guys doesn't like what they hear, they're free to go elsewhere. And I imagine whatever the conversation is with Riley Kugel, he's going to sit down with his family, with his people that he has around him. I know he's very close to his AAU coach, and they'll make the decision that's best for him. And I know that Florida, Riley Kugel is very light, very well liked in the locker room. And I'm sure if he decides to go elsewhere, they'll say good luck to you and what have you. But that's they'll have another body, they'll have another vacancy that they can go out and shop around. But I don't think you can be beholden to one player. Okay, I think if I'm looking across the roster, having a guy like Alex Condon, having a guy like Tommy Hawk, obviously Walter Clayton come back, Will Richard, Denzel Aberdeen. That's a really good nucleus from which to build, considering last year they had four guys come back from last year's team. Riley Kugel and Will Richard won. One of them was Denzel Aberdeen, who hardly played at all. The other was Alex Shimsik, who hardly played at all. So they got a culture now of guys coming back, a half dozen guys who know what Todd wants, know how he wants it done on and off the floor, and now they have to fill in the pieces around it. And whether Riley Kugel's a part of that is something that they'll determine together.
So, Chris, what does your spring look like now that, unfortunately, basketball is over?
Well, I tell you what, I came in, I was out there working in my yard for the last 2.5 hours, and I got like 1 million pounds of pollen in my head right now. So I'm trying to get caught up on some of that stuff, but, you know, we'll have some stuff to do around here. There'll be spring football. There'll be women's, the softball team's pretty good. I think they're 29-4 right now. Swept a couple back-to-back SEC series. I get heavily involved in that as the season gets a little deeper. But don't you worry, I'll find some things to do. All I know is, it took you guys a whole year to call me about basketball, and you called me twice in the last 5 days. Okay, will I hear from you again before next year's NCAA tournament?
Absolutely, and don't blame me for that. Blame, you know, your buddy from a long time ago. He's
okay.
The one calling
all right,
shots.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and throw Francie under the bus. Especially when he's out of town on vacation.
I mentioned no names. But by the way, also gymnastics, Friday night, I know what I'll be doing this Friday evening with the NCAA Regionals. Chris, we really appreciate it, and I'm glad we got you out of doing the rest of your yard work.
All right, you guys, take care. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you. That is Chris Harry, FloridaGators.com. Covers the men's basketball team so incredibly closely. And obviously, Taylor, it was a really rough and halting end of the season when I know many people thought, not just Gator fans, but thought this team was talented enough to make a deeper postseason run. But the moment that Micah Hanlogton got injured in that SEC championship game against Auburn, you knew it was going to be a lot tougher. And then, like you said, Riley Kugel, the inconsistencies. He ended up playing fairly well in that game against Colorado, but hadn't played at all in those final two games of the SEC tournament. So it's just, it was all so kind of over the place there at the end.
Was there reasonings? Because I know during the season you were seeing a lot of Riley earlier, and then it kind of by mid-season you weren't seeing a ton. Then he didn't play a couple. Then he was back in. Were there reasonings of why? Was it just kind of a punishment? Or they didn't
ever
say?
It was never said. Oh. Yeah, it was just that was, you know, the coach's decision. That's what Todd thought was best for the team. And so people are obviously out there always going to try and figure it out or wonder. But I never heard of an exact thing. It just seemed like the rotation at the time was better without him. If right away Todd Golden got the feeling that maybe he wasn't hustling, and then other times when he was hustling that he was going to play longer. So it like I said, as soon as Hanlogton got injured, it felt like the excitement or the confidence was going to wane. You're always going to be excited when your team's in the NCAA tournament, but the confidence started to wane a little bit. All right, by the way, FSU played another run, so it is 5-3 in the bottom of the fourth. Florida is up to bat now, so we will keep you updated. And again, the play-by-play for this game is over on 10:10 a.m. Jeff Cardozo on the call. Got to see him earlier. Taylor Dahl and I will be back with you for more. Me O'Brien is on vacation. RJ Saunders back at Tintin XL headquarters. We've got Heels highlights and a whole lot more live from the baseball grounds on 92.5 FM.
These heels are made for talking.
Helmets and heels, illuminated by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers
on 1010 XL.
Welcome back to the baseball grounds. Florida and Florida State squaring off right now. FSU leads 5-3, and FSU is up to bat. So if you hear any roars in the background, that most likely means that FSU has scored again because we are sitting behind the FSU fan base. But some really beautiful weather here this evening, and certainly glad to be out here. And thanks to our friends at Gator Bowl Sports for having us. RJ Saunders, you got included in Heels highlights tonight. I need to know how long it took you to decide on your highlight.
About 15 seconds.
See, there are weeks that it takes me a lot longer than other weeks. And mine's usually, let's be honest, mine's usually a Jags highlight or some highlight from the University of Florida, whether it's gymnastics or basketball or baseball. It's usually one of those. And so I feel like tonight's Taylor, our highlights are going to be more obvious than in other times because people can probably already guess RJ's is going to be NBA related. Mm-hmm. You can probably already guess mine's, like I just said, Florida related somehow, some way. And yours, that's the only one that I have no idea what it will be. But RJ, take it away.
Nobody does it better. Nobody does it better.
Jacksonville Icemen win 4-3 over the Swamp Rabbits to move them within 4 points of first place.
Cockrell, a lefty, coming down on the right wing side. Cockrell to the backhand. What a move and an easy goal for Logan Cockrell. Oh, man, was that silky.
Was it ever. Again, the Iceman working on the backhand here on Ingham. Last second, just glided on in.
Jack Caglione's home run extends Florida's lead to 12-2 over LSU.
Cags goes opposite field, and that one is gone. And he'll get the last laugh.
What'd you say about tugging on a cape?
That's what I'm talking about. You don't wake them up when sometimes they're sleeping. And that first fastball, I don't think it was intentional. I don't know. But it certainly woke up Caglione, and that's a bomb out to left field. His 11th long ball of the year, his 24th RBI.
Cole Anthony gets the Magic fans on their feet as his tough layup gives Orlando the lead late in the fourth quarter.
Into the lane, Anthony, a pump fake layup. It's up and in! Cole Anthony, built for the moment! 107-106! Timeout, Sacramento!
Well, RJ's debut in the Heels highlights, I would say he did fairly well, wouldn't you, Taylor?
I would. I feel like that just gives us a perfect intro real quick because RJ has his NBA show now.
That he does, open gym on Sundays.
RJ, how's that been going?
I think it's going well so far. We've had a few amazing guests come on the program, including Orlando Magic experts each week to talk about the latest with the team as they continue to make the playoff push in the second half of the season. So hopefully everyone who's tuned in and listened in has enjoyed what we've been doing so far.
I'm absolutely sure they have because 1010 didn't have anything that was NBA focused or NBA related before. So open gym on Sundays. It's always at 11 a.m. Is that right? Or does it change based off of other shows?
Yeah, based on other shows, sometimes we'll have a 12 o'clock start. But for the most part, we start at 11 a.m.
All right. Awesome. So RJ's highlight, you just heard it with the Magic. And Taylor, I should have guessed because you mentioned Iceman early in the show. I should have guessed yours might be hockey related.
Yeah, the Iceman playing well again. They had a little bit rough patch in the beginning of March, losing a few in a row. But now they've now won four of the last five. And sorry, our iPad just dropped.
If you were watching on the YouTube stream.
Yeah, our live stream fell, but we're
good. I was concerned that was going to happen at some point tonight because this is a congested area here along the third baseline. But yeah,
that was a
break.
Little kid, so it's
little kid, no breakage. We might get it back up. If we don't, you know what happened. We'll blame it on the little
it's
kid.
Just you're seeing the ceiling right now if you were watching our live stream. But, yeah, so, yeah, they've won four of their last.
By the way, Taylor, you're pointed again.
Another raccoon.
I was really afraid it was a raccoon. Once again, coming through our show, but alas, not a raccoon, just
not
iPad,
a raccoon.
iPad down.
But it's good. So they've won four of the last five. They're now in third place, 4 points back from first place. Greenville Swamp Rabbits have played good all year. They started really hot, so they've pretty much sat in first place all season. It's been the Iceman's biggest competition when it comes to hopefully moving up and getting that first place spot. Either way, they're in the playoffs right now. They're sitting third, but they've been playing really good hockey again. Unfortunately, it's that time of year where they have the AHL will start snagging the players that are good because they're trying to make their run. In addition
That's
to player their players get hurt, and because ECHL, it's obviously ECHL, AHL, NHL. The ECHL, unfortunately, they get all their if they have good players, they get snagged up to the AHL, and it's this time of year when usually you start seeing it happen. So I want to say three or four guys recently have been called up to the AHL. Great for them, obviously they get to go on to the next level. Not super ideal for the Iceman because not only are you losing good players a lot of times, but it also messes with the, you know, just the kind of cohesion that they've made within those last couple months and how good they've been playing. But they still manage it. Like I said, Greenville's been number one pretty much all season, and the Iceman were able to beat them in a shootout And that was fun because you always, overtime in hockey is wild. Shootouts in hockey, even more wild. So it was a fun game, but I'm excited because now we're headed, it's getting really close to the postseason, and postseason hockey's fun. So
now this will affect all the other teams too, not just the Icemen as far as players getting called up.
Yeah.
So it does even the playing field as far as that's concerned. By the way, FSU still batting in the top of the fifth and already scored another run with a double line drive from Daniel Cantu. And so it is 6-3 FSU leading Florida. Again, if you want the full play-by-play, that is over on 1010 AM. Taylor Dahl, I'm Lauren Brooks. RJ Sonner's back at 1010 XL headquarters. We're here at the Baseball Grounds. Mia O'Brien on vacation this week. She will be back next week with us. All right, Taylor, I have compiled some of the most fun spring activities on the First Coast.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, you heard my highlight. We've already talked a lot about Jack Caglione, but that was when he hit a home run against LSU right after they had thrown a ball that went very close to his head. And so Florida fans were not happy about that, but then very happy that Florida obviously ended up going on to win, like we talked about, winning 12-2 in eight innings. So Florida run-ruled LSU, one of the best teams in the country, in Baton Rouge. So that was exciting stuff. And I'm hoping next week on the show when we do this with, for our highlights, that I'll have a gymnastics highlight because it is the regional gymnastics on Friday night. Florida is one of the regional hosts along with three other cities and schools. All right. So here are the spring activities on the First Coast. We talked about a couple of these earlier. The Jumbo Shrimp, the first home game series begins this Friday. So you've got games Friday night, 7:05, first pitch, Saturday, 6:35, Sunday, 3:05, all against Gwinnett. For people who've never been to a Jumbo Shrimp game, I cannot tell you how much fun it is.
Oh, I love Jumbo Shrimp games. And especially, I mean, there's something extra about opening day slash week for the shrimp. Because it's just, everyone wants to get out here.
It's usually sold out.
Usually sold out. And then just everybody's ready because you're getting to that point. And I know we're in Florida, so we don't have like a winter like other places. But you're getting to that weather where you want to be outside and enjoy baseball. So I am very excited about baseball season coming up in general, but it's nice to have the Jumbo Shrimp. And they always have the best, like, promotional games and stuff like that. Like, the bobbleheads they put out and all the different games. I haven't looked at their list of promotional stuff. I'm sure it's already out. Maybe I'll look that up. Because some of those games are fun to go to because it'll be, like, Wacky Shirt Day or whatever it may be. Obviously, Thirsty Thursdays are a popular one around here. But, yeah, definitely a go-to once it gets – before it gets too hot also.
And that's the key. Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, the weather. Usually, too, you'll see some really nice sunsets out here.
Yeah.
And what I love now that the Jumbo Shrimp are AAA, people take it seriously.
Yeah.
Now, before when it was AA, there were some that took it seriously. But I do feel like fans have kind of stepped up their knowledge and also paying attention to the actual games.
Yeah.
So you've got that. Like I said, that begins this Friday as the first home series. And I know Saturday night the fireworks are after the game.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got, as far as music is concerned, Jack's River Jams begin next Thursday. That is downtown. The very first act is a country act. I did not get to choose that, so don't blame me if you don't like country. But Rodney Atkins is the first act. I will be going to that with my mom and some of her friends. Always go to Jack's River Jams if I can. It is so much fun. That is next Thursday.
He does How Country Feels, right? Is that him?
That is Randy Houser.
Yes.
Rodney Atkins does Down a Back Road. He does These Are My People.
Okay.
He does, there's quite a few more that you would absolutely know. And I won't sing them because that's not going to help anybody. But if you want more information, just Google Downtown Jack's River Jams. And there are three other ones after this coming Thursday that are not country.
Yeah. Andy Grammer's one. I actually like Andy Grammer.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him the first time I ever saw him, I think I was like 19.
Okay.
And he played at Freebird.
Oh.
He opened for another band I was going to see, this band called Secondhand Serenade. And he opened for Secondhand Serenade. They had just really started kind of hitting the scene at the music scene at the time, but his voice is incredible. It's one of the bands that are good on, like, when you're listening on Spotify, but better live.
Oh, I love that.
Because he's so musically talented. He can play guitar, he can play piano, he'll jump on the piano, he'll sing, he'll do all of it, but it also has a full band that they'll jump in on songs too. So really fun.
I love that. And then also music wise next weekend, Spring in the Blues at the Seawalk Pavilion. So obviously that's a free music festival that people love. And if you love the blues, head out to that. More music slash food slash rides related. The Clay County Agricultural Fair begins next Thursday, and they've got lots of different musical artists. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are all country. Friday is Tyler Farr. Saturday is Diamond Rio. And Sunday is Martina McBride.
Some
really good country. But they have artists in addition to that. Vanilla Ice is one of the artists performing this year at the Clay County Fair. So absolutely go there if you want some music and, like I said, some fair food and some rides. And then back to sports. Saturday, April 13th, is the Orange and Blue game. That would be the Florida Spring game. That is at 1 p.m. That is free. And so that'll be a lot of fun. You finally get to see DJ Lagway for the Florida fans who are excited to see him, and Graham Mertz as well. FSU Spring Showcase is Saturday, April 20th, so the following Saturday at 4 p.m. Now, I did read that due to construction going on inside Doak Campbell, it is going to be limited capacity. So as far as if you want to go to that, make sure you find out if you can get tickets. I don't want people to be like, I was planning on going to the spring
Lauren
showcase. Lauren told me when it was, and I couldn't go because of the limited capacity. So I told you, look on FSU's website to find out more information about that.
I have one more, too.
Go for it.
Because the brunch...
We are here to serve the people. Oh, yes.
The brunch fest is happening downtown. So they have two different ones because it's like an all-day thing. So it's the normal brunch fest. It's April 7th. Which has the Expendables are playing, that a bunch of bands all day long. But then there's the Brunch Fest after dark, too, which is also April 7th.
You can
brunch all day.
Brunch all day. You are winning.
But this is in Riverside, actually. So a ton of stuff coming up the next couple weeks. And I'm super excited. I'll probably be at this Brunch Fest because it sounds right up my alley. But
yes. And anytime there's live music, usually Taylor or I or both of us have found our way to it.
Because Who Rescued Who is playing, by the way.
I saw that. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so I also saw this coming weekend, not this weekend, not Easter weekend, but next weekend. And oh, by the way, Easter is this weekend. Next weekend is the St. Augustine Lions Seafood Festival.
Oh, yeah.
So lots of different stuff going on in our area. And whether it's food, music, and football, baseball, whatever it ends up being, it's all a lot of fun. And like I said, Florida's hosting the gymnastics, so some people are going to go down to Gainesville and get to see the NCAA regionals. All right, we've got one segment to go here in Helmets and Heels on 92.5 FM.
Sports with a glass of Chardonnay. Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
1 second to go here live from the baseball grounds. Florida State leads Florida 6-3 in the bottom of the fifth. So certainly if the score holds or if FSU goes on to win, that means FSU will have won this series against Florida because FSU, as you remember, 2 weeks ago beat Florida 12-8 in Gainesville. And then these two teams will wrap up their third game in Tallahassee later this season. So certainly a lot of innings left to play, Taylor, but this one so far has gone the way of the Noles.
Yeah, I didn't realize the score was already that.
We don't exactly have a vantage point. We love being out here. We are not complaining. But our vantage point is of like a sliver of the field, more so than the entire field.
I can see right fielder, the second baseman, and the third baseman, and that's about it right now, which is fine. I will take that view over inside of my office. But, yeah, I can't quite see. I was seeing a lot of Noles cheer, so I figured it was good on that. You hear that war chant, and you know something good's happening on that side.
Yes, yeah, because like we said earlier, the FSU contingent is right in front of us, the third baseline. The Florida fans are over on the first baseline, which is how it is pretty much every year. Actually, they may rotate, now that I think about it. I think they must rotate each year as far as third base and first base dugouts. Either way, it is an absolutely beautiful evening. If you've never been to this game and you love baseball, highly recommend getting tickets for next year before they sell out. And we were talking about this earlier, Taylor. If you look out behind center field at right field, there used to be bleachers there.
Yes.
And they're not there right now. And so I'm assuming that that's all part of the renovations that are going to go on here. But I would think also that that meant that this game was selling out even faster than normal because you didn't have that additional seating.
Because that few weeks ago, whenever it was, my time's running together now. I mentioned to you on break, I've been in like a blur because I've been moving. And so this last few weeks I've run together. But I came to see the Savannah Bananas. And the Savannah Bananas already sell out every time. And they didn't have bleachers. And so it was just in like 1 second sold out, number one. But number two, it was so packed in like the just standing room area and out in the grass where normally like you can find a good spot and kind of space out. But you could not because there was no bleachers for people to sit in. So definitely need those back for events like this. But they are doing a ton of cool things when it comes to the renovations. They're building the whole kind of center field, new like hangout concession area and stuff like that. I don't know really what they're doing with that bleacher side. Maybe just new bleachers. I'm not totally sure. They're building the storefront where you'll have access now on when it's not game day. And it's like the whole in front. If you're walking down like right before you walk into the gates, they're building a big storefront so that's open all the time. So that's nice because a lot of times, you know, you want to get that game day gear before you actually get to the game. So they're doing a ton of stuff, and I'm really excited to see what it all looks like once it's done.
Yes, this ballpark, I forget exactly when it was built. I want to say 20 years ago now, maybe a little bit before that. And so certainly the renovations need to happen. And I mean, I say that I wouldn't have expected renovations to be this soon. This ballpark still feels fairly new to me.
Yeah,
but I understand to keep up with the times, you've got to always have improvements in your hospitality. It opened basically 20 years ago, and so it makes sense that they want to improve a few different areas and some hospitality. And so we look forward to coming to all the Jumbo Shrimp games this year and then seeing what it looks like next year. All right, Taylor, do you feel bad for Zach Wilson?
No.
You saw the story that came out today. Originally, Jets owner said they couldn't wait to get rid of him. Basically, they need a backup quarterback. They ended up getting Jacoby Brissett, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then now they can't trade him, so they're like, oh, well, we might just hang on to him. How would you feel if you're him?
That's definitely unfair to Zach Wilson, and I think that it's one of the situations where you look at Zach, and it's here in Jacksonville you're happy about it because here in Jacksonville we still say thank you Frank Gore because it would have been Zach Wilson here in Jacksonville. Maybe they would have gone Trey Lance. Maybe they would have gone Justin Fields. Right. Either way, all of those quarterbacks are on different teams right now.
Yes,
that were drafted after Trevor Lawrence. So either way, thank you. But I do think that, and it's one of the things we talked about last when it came to Justin Fields and the way Ryan Poles handled things and how he was very much like, I want to do right by Justin. Justin got to pick the team that he wanted to go to out of, hey, here's your four or five choices. You pick which team that you want to go to. And he picked Pittsburgh Steelers. And now it's almost like the exact opposite situation. And it's odd because a lot of people are big fans of Robert Saleh and what he's been able to do with the Jets and how he's kind of built this, built the culture there in New York, which has, they had a lot of losing too. And it looked like he was flipping things around, but the way that this situation looks like it's handled is not so good. I just don't see how that is good for the locker room whatsoever when you're pretty much going to say, bye, then never mind, we can't get you anywhere. So well, I guess we'll keep you.
Yeah, at this point, if I'm Zach Wilson, I'm almost hoping, or Tyrod Taylor, not Jacoby Brissett, that's the backup for the Jets. They're all kind of the same. The mobile quarterbacks who once were starters. I feel like if I'm Zach Wilson, I am praying that a team wants me.
Yeah.
Just so I can get out of the New York spotlight and get out of the fact that I'm definitely going to be the third quarterback, because maybe if he's a backup quarterback somewhere and something happens to the starter, he maybe in a different environment would play better. Obviously, he hasn't been nearly as good as being drafted second overall.
Yeah, definitely not.
That has not worked out for the Jets. But if I'm him personally, like just thinking about it emotionally, like I would absolutely want to leave New York, especially with what the owner has said about me and the fact that they did bring someone else in. They didn't trust me as a backup, like not even to back up Aaron Rodgers. And so, if I just started to think about it and I was like, we always talk about certain players in a casual way, right? A casual fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really stop and think about it, it's like, if that happened to me personally, like, all right, you're not good enough for this, so we're demoting you to this, and then really you're not even good enough at that, so this is all in the public eye.
Yeah.
That would be incredibly hard for me. And
then they're like, never mind, still Monday because we
and then correct, like, we've demoted you, we've given you a pay cut, we've we've basically said on social media, like, you're not good at your job. But, yeah, you still have to come to work and work as hard as you once did, and everyone's laughing at you. Like, well, that's awful.
Because being told you're going to be the backup to Aaron Rodgers is one thing. You
Absolutely.
Can handle that. You're like, okay, a Hall of Fame quarterback, Super Bowl-winning quarterback. I get it. I can sit behind him. I can learn. I can develop. I can get to a place where I can start eventually. But then you get shoved to that third quarterback spot when just a few years ago you were drafted second overall. It definitely is a shot, but I'm sure a part of it, Zach has to know he hasn't done enough to earn a spot, honestly. And if not even any team is saying, there's a lot of moving quarterback pieces this offseason, and you saw some guys, Tyrod Taylor, there's a list of like 5, 6, 7 guys who I even kind of was like, whoa, they got selected before Justin Fields got it selected. That's before I knew what the process was. But Zach Wilson has to see that too. I think the Jets are going to be – it's going to be an interesting thing because they've built such a good product when it comes to – their defense was really good last season. Their offense, aside from the quarterback, there was like a few things that were kind of weird at certain moments, but it was almost directly all correlated to the quarterback play. And now Aaron Rodgers coming back, hasn't played in a year, and didn't play well the year before that in Green Bay. So it's going to be interesting to see what level Aaron Rodgers plays at and how ready he is to go, because that will be an interesting thing for New York.
It certainly will. I feel like all the drama there is fun to watch because we're not Jets fans. I don't have any friends who are Jets fans, so I can just sit back and almost laugh. Not at the injury. I don't ever want to laugh at injuries.
Yeah.
But, all right, let's say hello to Ryan the Hacker Green. Hacker, we've got FSU leading Florida 6-3 in baseball, and
I think they just hit another home run.
I have a feeling that, FSU just scored again based off of the cheering that is going on in front of us. Tough night so far for the Gators, Hack.
It's not been a good week for Florida athletics, right? I mean, Gator basketball and then baseball. I guess, well, they did take 2 out of 3 from LSU and Baton Rouge, but
it was huge,
but it would be bad to lose another one to the Noles. Florida's kind of dominated this series as of late, but that is certainly not the case this year.
Noah, Link Jarrett, if Florida State wins tonight, Link Jarrett, that would be 2-0 this season. But yeah, as far as Florida athletics overall are concerned, that ending to the Florida men's basketball game against Colorado just hurt so much, and I'm sure you're like me. It hurt that night. It hurt the next day. I was cheering for Marquette to beat Colorado, it still honestly lingers. It's painful.
Yeah, after Florida lost the game in that fashion, I should have put my life savings on the Sacramento Kings the next night against Orlando. Because when it rains, it pours, right? So not only do I lose basically on a buzzer beater on Friday, I lose on an awful referee call on Saturday. So, again, I need to take my my instincts and put that to good fortune, because I just know when it rains, it pours. So, yeah, it's been not a good week for me, but hopefully the Magic at least can turn that around beginning tomorrow night.
Well, certainly good luck with that. By the way, we were correct. FSU scored again, and it is 7-3 FSU. Hacker, are you excited about baseball season? You've got the fact that the Rays play host to the Blue Jays 4:10 p.m. on Thursday.
I'm fired up, Lauren. There's absolutely no question about that. In fact, Andrew Gibson, the host of River City Hardball, will join me in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, kind of previewing opening day. It'll take me a little bit to ease into it. I'll be all Orlando Magic until they ultimately get swept by the Knicks in round one. But when that happens, then I'll be all Tampa Bay Rays, at least until probably training camp for the Jaguars. That's usually my sports schedule.
All right, what's coming up tonight, Hack?
Yeah, the new kicking rules are fascinating. We're going to have Mike Hollis, former Jaguar kicker, on to talk about this new hybrid kickoff rule that the NFL is going to try in 2024. Mike's got an interesting take on it because he saw this 4 or 5 years ago, this certain play, the kickoff, in the developmental stages even before the XFL. So Mike's got a lot of thoughts on that. We got college spring ball. We got Major League Baseball. We got a lot to do tonight until 10 o'clock.
All right, excellent. We'll be listening. Thank you, Hack.
Thanks, guys.
And Taylor, your Cubs take on the World Series champs 7:35 on Thursday. Are you nervous?
I'm not nervous. It's so early, like the first game. I just get excited. It's baseball season, and I love opening. I guess we kind of had, I was telling Rick, I guess a little pre-opening day, because they had
Dodgers-Padres.
Yes, but it's my opening day for the Chicago Cubs, and it's at night, which is perfect because the last few years it's been while I was at work. And granted, I can still kind of watch, but being at 7:05, I think it is, I get to actually go out and watch with the Cubs group that I watch out in Jacksonville. So I am very excited.
Well, good. I will be at work when they play, but I'm not as much of a diehard fan as you, so I will survive. All right, that's going to do it for us tonight. For the absent Mia O'Brien on vacation, for Taylor Dahl, I'm Lauren Brooks, and thank you so much to RJ Saunders for making it all happen. Again, FSU is leading the baseball game, and last I saw it was 7-3. The score may have changed since then, but we will keep you updated, and again, the game over on 10:10 a.m. Don't go anywhere. Hacker takes you into, not into the night, Hacker takes you into the dark. Hacker After Dark comes up next instead of Into the Night. Thanks for listening to 10:10X on 82.5 FM.